The Healer, The Healing Work of Mary Baker Eddy, compiled and arranged by David Keaston. Part 5. Gave them power and authority. Luke 9, verse 1. Dominion, 1892 to 1910. Pleasant View was the name of her cherished home in Concord, New Hampshire. Much of the maturing of her church came about during her life at Pleasant View, a period spanning 17 years, 1892 to 1908. Her exercise of spiritual dominion and demonstration of God's infinite power in the minutiae of daily life and the growth of her church was always inspiring. A lesson to all who had the privilege of her instruction or the benefit of her healing ability. Number 185. Ira O. Knapp, one of Mrs. Eddy's most trusted and valued students, relates an interesting sidelight on discipline in her church regarding one of the members. One of the early cases that came before the directors was a charge of immoral conduct against a first member who was a student of Mrs. Eddy's. From the evidence submitted, the directors were convinced that the charges were sustained. They, therefore, removed the individual from membership in the church and took his practitioner's card out of the Christian Science Journal, thereby depriving him of his livelihood. That punishment in no wise healed the individual, but made him so rebellious that he threatened a lawsuit in revenge. When Mrs. Eddy heard of this case, she asked the directors to restore her student to full church membership, including his office as a first member, and to replace his card in the journal. This resulted in a complete healing of the individual. From Luke, "As ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. For if ye love them which love you, what thank have ye? For sinners also love those that love them. But love ye your enemies, and do good, and lend, hoping for nothing again. And your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the Highest. For he is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. Be ye therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful. Judge not, and ye shall not be judged. Condemn not, and ye shall not be condemned. Forgive, and ye shall be forgiven." Number 186. James F. Gilman was the artist under Mrs. Eddy's direction and was responsible for the pictures in Christ and Christmas. In his recollections, he showed how one benefited from receiving a rebuke from Mrs. Eddy the right way. He recounts the experience the day following his rebuke from her, when he met again with her. "I heard the gentle rustle on the stairs that I had learned to know, followed by her appearance in the doorway. Instantly, I felt that she perceived the state of my mind upon seeing me. As I arose and advanced a step to meet her and receive her extended hand of welcome, she retained the hold upon my hand as she stood near in her precious spiritual way, and with earnest solicitation said, yearningly like a mother, "It seems hard to bear, I know. You won't feel hard toward me, will you?" I felt I must be severe, because you needed it. But it was hard for me to be so. I was silent. Words failed me for the moment. But Mrs. Eddy continued to look for hoped-for audible signs of submissive acceptance of her rebuke as proceeding from motives of love on her part, and thus to plead with me as a mother with a son she would save. I finally found voice to say that there was nothing but gratitude in my mind for her faithfulness toward me, to which she joyfully responded, "I am so glad." "Oh," she said with great feeling, "you know what burdens I have borne through the necessity I have felt for rebuking students, but could not receive my rebuke as coming from true love for them." This is the great test of the true student. If they are found unwilling to bear this test, they are not worthy to be found in this work. It is the resentment that rebuke uncovers or excites that makes up the burden, the terrible burden that I have had and still have to bear in this pioneer work of Christian Science. It was nothing but a constant joy to me to minister to the needs of humanity in the healing work. It was when I began to teach and be faithful with students that I began to know of suffering and sorrow. From Miscellaneous Writings. Jesus taught by the wayside in humble homes. He spake of truth and love to artless listeners and dull disciples. His immortal words were articulated in a decaying language, and then left to the providence of God. Christian Science was to interpret them, and woman, last at the cross, was to awaken the dull senses, intoxicated with pleasure or pain, to the infinite meaning of those words. At times, Mrs. Eddy's demeanor appeared to be totally changed. As the occasion required, she rose in the strength of the Spirit, rebuking error in the treatment of a student or situation, taking on the appearance of someone considerably taller than when one would see her in other circumstances. Julia Bartlett confirms this in her reminiscence when she said, "I never saw a grander demonstration of truth than I witnessed as a young student when I saw our leaders stand before one who had for a long time seemed to be held by a very stubborn error." When it did not yield, she gradually rose to a greater and greater power until she seemed a tower of strength, not sparing the error the sharp cutting rebuke necessary for its destruction, until this woman was free, and she has since been a faithful worker in the cause of Christian Science. Number 187. On going downstairs to breakfast one morning, I met Miss Morgan, the housekeeper, and she told me that the farmer who served Mrs. Eddy with milk, when he came that morning, seemed to be very solemn and said his well was frozen, and the well from which he obtained water for his cattle was empty. Mrs. Eddy had instructed her students to work several weeks for no rain at this time because of the necessity of finishing the roof work on the mother church, which was under construction. On the day before, he was obliged to go to a brook or river, which was frozen and some distance away. He had taken barrels in his wagon, which he filled with ice and snow from the river, and took home to melt, so as to have water for his cows. This was very hard work. It took a long time, and he was much distressed. During that day, I mentioned his difficulties to Mother, telling her just what happened. She smiled and said, "Oh, if he only knew." Then after a moment's silence, "Love fills that well." The next morning, when the farmer brought the milk, he was overjoyed and told Miss Morgan what a wonderful thing had occurred. That morning early, when he had gone out to attend the cattle, he found the well full of water. And in spite of the bitter cold day, with all the ice and snow around, the well was full of water. He said, "It must have been Mrs. Eddy's prayers that had done it all. She must have had something to do with it, for it was a miracle." He had a great reverence for Mrs. Eddy, although he was not a scientist. That day, when we were at dinner, I told Mother what had happened and just what the man had said. Oh, the joy and sweetness, the illumination and love of her face is ever to be remembered. Her expressions of praise and gratitude to God were glorious, and she said, "Oh, didn't I know?" She gave us a lesson in Christian Science which has blessed us ever since. Number 188. Mrs. Eddy turned to Gilbert Carpenter, at one time a secretary in her home, and said in explanation, "Oh, Mr. Carpenter, isn't God good? Oh, trust in the dear, good God." To him this seemed a present-day fulfillment of the words of Scripture, 2 Kings 3, verse 17. "For thus saith the Lord, ye shall not see wind, neither shall ye see rain. Yet that valley shall be filled with water, that ye may drink, both ye and your cattle and your beasts." Number 189. In the reminiscences of Edward P. Bates is to be found one of the truly inspiring accounts of how God works in the affairs of men, when true spiritual understanding demonstrates, "Thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven." The following is his recollection of a conversation with Mrs. Eddy concerning his considerable part in the construction of the original edifice of the Mother Church. Dinner was duly served, and while at dinner, she stopped eating and said, "Mr. Bates, the directors were up here yesterday, and I told them that but for you, the church would never have been built." I replied, "Mrs. Eddy, but for you, the church would never have been built." She said again, "Mr. Bates, but for you, the church would never have been built." I again replied, "But for you, Mrs. Eddy, the church never would have been built." The third time she said, "Mr. Bates, if you had not come and helped me, the church never would have been built." I replied, "Mrs. Eddy, but for your demonstrations, the church would never have been built." There was no further conversation of this nature at the table, and after dinner we retired again to the library and were alone for some time. After a general conversation, she looked me straight in the eye and said, "Mr. Bates, are you prepared for what is to come?" I could not think what she meant, and asked her. She said, "Are you prepared for the treatment you will receive?" I could not imagine what she meant. I supposed that everybody would be so glad the church was built, and we could hold services in our own temple, that they would rejoice with everyone who had anything to do with its construction. She went on to say, "You came here in answer to prayer. I prayed God for 3 months to send me a man to finish the church. He heard my prayer and sent you, and you followed my demonstration, and the church is finished. But they will hate you for helping Mother." This seemed incomprehensible. She went on to say, "They will shun you. They will try to ruin you morally, physically, financially, and spiritually." Of this, I had ample proof within a few weeks. Number 190. This shows us what Mr. Bates had to deal with for being faithful. But Mrs. Eddy knew the treatment very well, for she had received it 1,000 times more severely than Mr. Bates. She knew how MAM, malicious animal magnetism, operated through her materially minded students to deny her. And they still are. Bates continued, "Before my leaving, she said, 'We have built the church. It will be easy for branch churches to build their structures, as we have cleared the way.' If the mother church had not been finished at the time I designated, it would have remained a monument to the error, and my students would have died sudden and unnatural deaths. You have helped me to save them." Number 191. It was during the month of March that I began to realize what Mrs. Eddy meant when she said, "The students will shun you," etc. I found in an audience of over 1,000 students, there were hardly 15 or 20 of them that would speak to me at all. And many of them took deliberate pains to shun my personality. It went about the church currently that the Bateses were animal magnetism, and that if people wanted to be well and live, they must shun the Bateses. Mrs. Eddy never wrote nor taught that any one person or any one set of persons embodied animal magnetism. We, Mr. Bates and his wife, bore this as well as we could, but it continued with gradually less pressure until I was appointed president of the church for the third term, when it nearly died out. I remember well that many students came to me and took my hand, saying that they had been abusing me both orally and mentally and wanted to be forgiven. I told them that I had nothing against them, and was glad if they wanted to do right instead of wrong. Number 192. Mrs. Eddy once said to Miss Shannon, Clara M. Sainsbury Shannon, CSD, was a worker in Mrs. Eddy's home from 1894 to 1903. You have wonderful physical health. Nothing seems to touch you. However, there came a day, Miss Shannon recounted, when she experienced a severe attack of diphtheria. She did not want Mrs. Eddy to know how ill she was, and thus be a burden to her, and she went to the Buswells at Christian Science Hall, Concord. On arrival, she was found to be very ill and was put to bed. They wanted to send to Boston for James A. Neal, a fellow Christian Scientist and practitioner. But there was no time for that. When it seemed that Miss Shannon could not live another 10 minutes, Mrs. Eddy drove up to the door and inquired after the patient. Mrs. Buswell told her of the condition. Mrs. Eddy said, "Go and tell her there is nothing to fear, that love is taking care of her, and that I am praying for her." When Miss Shannon received this message, all fear left her, and she felt instantaneous relief. She knew she was healed. She fell asleep and did not wake until 8 o'clock the next morning. She had not slept the previous night. She dressed and came down to breakfast with Mr. and Mrs. Buswell and found 2 letters from Mrs. Eddy telling her to return. Miss Shannon was perfectly well and walked back to Pleasant View after breakfast. She told Mrs. Eddy how her words had healed her. From John. The nobleman saith unto him, "Sir, come down ere my child die." Jesus saith unto him, "Go thy way, thy son liveth." And the man believed the word that Jesus had spoken unto him, and he went his way. And as he was now going down, his servants met him and told him, saying, "Thy son liveth." Then inquired he of them the hour when he began to amend. And they said unto him, "Yesterday at the 7th hour the fever left him." So the father knew that it was at the same hour in the which Jesus said unto him, "Thy son liveth," and himself believed, and his whole house. Number 193. An interesting experience may be related from Edward Everett Norwood, another student of Mrs. Eddy's. Some time before this, I had withdrawn from the Methodist Church and felt their prayers and appeals quite forcibly, the mesmerism of old theology. In fact, for some time I was utterly miserable, knew the cause, but could not seem to meet it. At this time, in response to Mrs. Eddy's invitation to "Please write again and let me know how you are getting along," I wrote her and mentioned the mental darkness. I have not forgotten the wonderful freedom that came to me 3 days later when she read my letter and the claim was instantly healed. I rejoiced with joy unspeakable and thanked God. From Luke. And the chief priests and scribes sought how they might kill him. Number 194. A member of Mrs. Eddy's household had an appointment with the dentist, and Mrs. Eddy needed her just when the appointment was scheduled for some very important work and would not let her go. She said that if she had, she would have been allowing mortal mind to rob her of the time that should be sacrificed for the whole world's good. The need was met without the dentist, and the tooth filled with substance, metaphysically. From Science and Health. Divine love always has met, and always will meet, every human need. It is not well to imagine that Jesus demonstrated the divine power to heal only for a select number or for a limited period of time, since to all mankind and in every hour, divine love supplies all good. Number 195. One day, while I was taking Mrs. Eddy's dictation, she sent me with a message to Mr. Fry, who was in his room. When I reached the door, which was open, I saw him lying on his back on the carpet, apparently lifeless. I returned to our leader and told her about it, saying, "It seems as though he has fainted." She immediately rose, and we both went to his room. She kneeled beside him and lifted his arm, which fell inert. Then she began to talk to him. I had been praying for him, but what she said to him was a revelation to which I listened in wonder. Such heavenly words and tenderness, such expression of love, I had never heard, telling him the truth of man's relationship to God. After a while, he opened his eyes, and as soon as Mother saw that he was becoming conscious, her voice changed, and most severely she rebuked the error that seemed to be attacking him. Her voice and manner were so different, according to the need, that I was deeply impressed. Presently, she told him to rise on his feet and gave him her hand to help him up. Then she turned round and went out of the room down the passage where she had been sitting. Then she called out, "Calvin, come here." And he followed her. She spoke to him for several minutes, striving to wake him up, at times thundering against the error. Then she said, "Now you can go back to your room." He went from the passage towards his room. But before he entered, she called him again and talked to him, and this was repeated several times. I said, "Oh, Mother, couldn't you let him sit down a few minutes?" She said, "No, if he sits down, he may not waken again. He must be aroused. He is not quite awakened yet." She began to talk to him again and reminded him of the time when Martha Morgan and Mrs. Fry together drove out and spent the day there. And she began to remind him of the experiences of that day. That reached him, and she said, "You haven't forgotten, Calvin." And he said, "No, Mother," and laughed heartily. Then she talked more of the truth to him and told him he could go back to his room and this time watch. She explained to me that when you speak the truth to anyone, if the truth you speak causes him to laugh, cry, or get angry, you have reached the thought that needed correction. Mr. Fry was a changed man after that experience, to which he never referred. To me, such a demonstration was a glorious inspiration and lesson.